We have all heard the dire predictions about global warming, and now actual climate catastrophes provide mounting evidence that changing climate threatens all of us. Reactions are all over the map. Fear has environmentalists up in arms, while uncertainty about the science makes others resist change. I can't resolve this logical disconnect, but global warming moves relentlessly on and pays no heed to the defenders of oil, gas, and coal exploitation. In recent years, we have seen the glaciers melting and sea levels rising, which contributed to the flooding during Superstorm Sandy. Just as the mining and burning of coal changed people's lives in Muhlenberg County a half century ago, today burning coal and oil is causing upheaval to people's lives all over the world. In India, once fertile farmland is turning to desert because the Himalayan snowpack no longer sends enough water. Thousands of Indian farmers, with no way to provide food for their families, spirits crushed, have committed suicide. The fact that global warming could destroy our way of life scares the hell out of me, which is quite a feat for a universalist. I really think we should take action. My spirit says do. But we seem to be stuck, locked into a consumerist paradigm and continuing to spew out more carbon pollution. Knowing that poor people will suffer even more because of our actions puts me to shame. For a long time, we have been warned by people I trust, and I am angry because we have done so little about it. I so yearn for someone to come up with a simple remedy for global warming. But the problem won't be cured easily or quickly because it involves climate science, partisan politics, global economics, world poverty, religious teachings, lifestyle choices, and more. It is a devilishly wicked, extremely complex problem that continues to defy solution. It threatens to change every part of our lives, and that overwhelms me. Global warming presents us with an overarching spiritual dilemma. How will we survive while the world as we know it changes so dramatically? Of course, as a minister, I believe spiritual sustenance is the first thing we need to address. In 1976, I went to work for the Tennessee Valley Authority, or TVA, as an engineer at Paradise Fossil Plant, the one John Prine sang about. I was proud of TVA, as were most people in the region, because it had lifted people from the poverty of the Great Depression. TVA meant cheap power, new industry, rural electrification, and fertilizer for modern farming. People's standard of living had improved tremendously. To my engineering mind, it made sense that the plant was built in the middle of the Western Kentucky coal fields. The destruction of the town of Paradise was a necessary evil, I thought. I interpreted Prine's lament as a fitting epitaph, but I couldn't get too worked up about it. To a young engineer, progress trumped nostalgia. The TVA story is just one chapter of the story of steam power, industrialization, and capitalism, which continues to play out over and over again around the world. And now we have entered into a fantastic new era in which Silicon Valley constantly outdoes itself with amazing new apps and gadgets to make our lives more comfortable, fun, and virtual. Free market fundamentalists claim technological innovation driven by American-style consumerism is the only way to solve the problems of the world. But for the last few centuries, while standards of living have risen, unpaid costs of doing business have been accruing. The manufacture of almost everything we eat, drive, live in, or play with has been powered by fossil fuels, and has released carbon dioxide, so much so that the Earth's atmosphere is warming and will inevitably do so for many decades to come. TVA, which powers the Tennessee Valley region, is also its biggest polluter. The Paradise plant alone burns 1,000 tons of coal an hour and puts 15 million tons of carbon dioxide into the atmosphere each year. Today, large numbers of people around the world are seeing rising standards of living, which is a good thing. But the problem is, providing for them demands more and more energy. Because countries which industrialized earlier have already sent so much carbon into the atmosphere, currently developing countries are being told they can't burn coal to provide the energy they need. The current plans for globalization just aren't sustainable. We can't tell the developing world to leave people in poverty, nor can we justify continuing our high carbon usage. To make things worse, it doesn't seem to matter to Halliburton and friends how distressed we are about global warming. They just continue to drill, baby, drill. Carbon extraction companies are tearing up the land and poisoning people's water faster than ever before. They are doing it in ever more risky and dangerous ways and places. Fracking in Pennsylvania, tar sand strip mining in Alberta, oil fields in Kenya, coal plants in India. They are creating sacrifice zones where the land and its people are forsaken. Then they write it all down as the progress of man. John Prine sang about the loss of a beloved way of life when coal mining destroyed paradise. But soon, because we must stop burning coal, miners, power plant workers, and others in coal states, like Kentucky and Indiana, will lose their jobs and way of life. Helping those who will be hurt by economic upheaval is no small issue for us. There are so many environmental atrocities and problems at this crucial time for human survival that we can't make sense of our conflicting feelings about them. Fear that what we love about our country will be taken from us is underneath a lot of climate change denial. In her must-read book, This Changes Everything, Naomi Klein says, "The real reason we are failing to rise to the climate moment is because the actions required directly challenge our reigning economic paradigm, which is deregulated capitalism combined with public austerity. The stories on which Western cultures are founded, that we stand apart from nature and can outsmart its limits, and activities that form our identities and define our communities, shopping, living virtually, shopping some more. In short, we have not responded to this challenge because we are locked in politically, physically, and culturally. How are we going to come to grips with all of this?" We need help coping with confusion over global warming's confounding complexity, fear of its predicted consequences, and feeling shame and guilt that we are causing it. So the first thing we need to find is strength for our spirits to be able to carry us through the difficulties ahead. Just like we need to use renewable energy, we need renewable sources of strength for our spirits. We are going through major changes in our weather. Freakish weather from the North Pole to South America was a Washington Post headline last week. The dramatic storms are ending a year of record-setting weather globally, with July measured as the hottest month ever and 2015 set to be the warmest year. We are already experiencing unusually large storms and human casualties, and we have all heard the scientists' dire warnings of coming cataclysms. The recent string of weather disasters is a harbinger of changes that will come to our way of life. we will lose some things we love. Spiritually speaking, we are pre-grieving our inevitable losses. John Prine's lament for his old home tells the importance of naming and singing about our losses. We will all experience the feelings of grief, disbelief, sadness, anger, and so on. Show each other understanding and compassion as we all try to come to grips with the effects of climate change, even those who are living in denial. In his encyclical, Pope Francis says the expected toll on human society is staggering. Global climate change is reducing access to drinking water, limiting access to food, and negatively impacting human health, particularly in Africa, Asia, and Latin America. Although global climate change affects all human populations across the globe, it hits those living in poverty the hardest, because they depend on the surrounding physical environment to supply their needs and have limited ability to cope with climate variability and extremes. He points us to another thing we can do to renew our spirits. We can work with the poor. Connecting with the people most affected by global warming is not only the moral thing to do, it keeps us focused on the human experience of our evolving world, and it strengthens feelings of friendship, mutual support, and community. In parts of the globe, local and native people are leading in the fight against rampaging carbon extraction. They are stopping coal shipping in the Pacific Northwest, coal plants in India, battling tar sands companies in Alberta, and preventing fracking in New York. It is ironic that we are looking to some of the poorest, the most systematically disenfranchised people on the planet for rescuing the climate. Partnering with them, not as saviors or as an act of charity, but as equals, we can learn what is really important about the land and how to live sustainably on it. And people who live close to the land know how vital it is to maintain a spiritual connection with the earth. From Celtic, pagan, and Native American traditions, I have learned to pay attention as my spirit moves with the cycle of the seasons, and I feel more grounded inside and more in tune with the world. As climate changes, this will be ever more important. You know, we were supposed to have learned these lessons a couple of millennia ago from the ancient Near Eastern flood stories, like Noah's Ark, in which their God told the people how to survive and how to create a better way of life after the floodwaters receded. Those apocalyptic stories predicted doom for those who didn't change their ways, but they didn't say the world was going to end. What stories of apocalypse were really saying is, you need to rethink your self-destructive ways and find a way to live more sustainably. They actually offered hope for a better future. We need to reframe our own story to give us hope we can deal with global warming. Maybe the Paris Climate Agreement is the beginning of such a roadmap. It gives me hope that we can change not only how we create electricity, but it also calls for major changes in how we provide for the needs of the poor and how we care for the well-being of all people. The agreement's good intentions still need to be fleshed out, and it will take an extraordinary effort by many leaders to implement its ideals. I am proud that our president is outspoken on climate change. However, as we are all too painfully aware, the U.S. Congress is still fiddling while Rome burns. But we shouldn't wait for all the deniers to become believers, because that may not happen anytime soon. Naomi Klein says, the shift will require rethinking the very nature of humanity's power, our right to extract ever more without facing consequences, our capacity to bend complex natural systems to our will. This is a shift that challenges not only capitalism, but also the building blocks of materialism that preceded modern capitalism. She goes on to say, "I am convinced that climate change represents a historic opportunity. As part of the project of getting our emissions down, we have the chance to advance policies that dramatically improve lives, close the gap between rich and poor, create huge numbers of good jobs, and reinvigorate democracy from the ground up, which would get at the root of the crisis, and would leave us with both a more habitable climate than the one we are headed for, and a far more just economy than the one we have right now. There is hope if we band together. Native peoples, followers of Pope Francis, environmentalists, and anyone else who is ready to work to end the era of burning carbon. We know what to do, and we can start right now. An easy first step is to turn down the thermostat. The more energy you conserve at your home, the more you are really contributing to this cause. Take the challenge to keep reducing your home energy bills. This church has a strong environmental record, and your recent installation of solar panels is a bold step. You now have bragging rights and are an example for others. And I know this will energize this congregation to save even more energy. But don't stop there. Join with other progressives to advocate for policies that will help us mitigate the effects of global warming and build a sustainable relationship with the earth. Together, we can recreate our political and economic landscape. So then may we rewrite our social narrative, the cultural stories that tell us how to live, to make them about how we learn to use resources sustainably, to provide for the good of all people, and to stop global warming. Then we can add a chapter about how we rejoiced at our ability to save the world as we know it. Then our spirits will be renewed as we journey together towards a more wholesome future for our children and grandchildren. So may this be. Amen. And now, if you will, please.